A specter is haunting the world.
The specter of communism.
Hello everyone, this is Dante here again from the Spectre Podcast of the Communist Party USA, and today we'll be talking about some history of the party, especially in the youth movement around the Young Workers Liberation League, which was built out of the Du Bois clubs in the 1970s and 1980s, and we'll be specifically talking with some organizers from Washington, D.C. metro area who were involved with the YWLL in this time period. And the three organizers we'll be speaking with today are Jaime Cruz, a longtime Puerto Rican activist in the Washington, D.C. area. Gato Martinez Bentley, also longtime D.C. resident, black liberation activist, also had a long career as a multicultural educator in the D.C. area. And also we'll be speaking with Carl Gentile, and Carl has been a longtime labor activist in the Baltimore area, and is currently organizing with the club in the D.C. area. So I would like to welcome my guest today, and if you guys can introduce yourselves.
It's Carl Gentile.
And just give some, like, a little bit of background on what you do and such.
Yeah, I currently work for a labor relations company that mediates between labor unions and federal agencies in order to solve also do some EEO mediation.
Gotcha. Jaime, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Well, my name is Jaime Cruz. I work as a customer service rep for DC Health Exchange, basically getting people to acquire health insurance, mainly for working class folks in DC. To get either Medicaid or a managed care program so they can take care of their health needs.
This is Gato Martinez Bentley. I am currently unemployed as a teacher, educational worker in the schools for well over 40 years. And currently, I'm working to make sure that the reality of having the Claudia Jones School for Blue Education becomes a reality. And it's a tremendous time that we're living in. I have a lot of people quote me now the Bible, and I quote them some of Marx. I want them to understand some Marx and some Lenin. They quote me the Bible, I want to give them something straight up. Some people don't know. Two most read books in the history of the world is the Bible, and the other one is Karl Marx. That's kind of messed up. So just keep it real with people so they don't get out of touch with what solutions are. And not to sound condescending, but just be very clear, you know, we have a role to play. So I'm doing that, and I'm also a former member of the party, the Communist Party of the United States, as well as a card-carrying member of the Young Workers Liberation League.
Carl and Jaime, if you guys can kind of tie yourselves to the movement in any possible way before we dive into the actual discussion. Carl, you can start off.
Currently involved in the Claudia Jones Club of the Communist Party USA. You have a card.
Yes, I'm.
And then currently active, trying to do my best to move forward with some of the presentations on the Claudia Jones political education. That's it.
And Jaime, you have anything else to add about your ties to the movement?
Yeah, I basically, I grew up in New York City, born and bred, Puerto Rican from New York, and moved over to D.C. Back in 1972. And from 1974, I joined the Young Workers Liberation League. At the time, I was involved in doing a lot of solidarity work, especially around Puerto Rican solidarity with the anti-colonial struggle. Then also doing solidarity work in Central America, around El Salvador, around Nicaragua, around Guatemala. And I was a youth organizer for the youth employment bill at the time it was called the Gustus Hawkins John Conyers Full Employment Bill, and basically mobilized youth to participate in demonstration back in 1978, if I'm not mistaken. And so I did a lot of work working with church groups, especially youth, around full employment for our young people. And we took about 5 or 6 buses from here to New York. And I've basically been doing, I'm a community organizer, and been doing community organizing, some labor work when I was living in Puerto Rico. I was working in a health union there. And I'll just leave it there for the moment.
All right, so this podcast interview, I really want to kind of talk about the origins and like the movements around the Young Workers Liberation League in the 70s. And I think prior to that, they were called the Du Bois Clubs as well. And I kind of just want to like give our audience like what that moment was and like what, how the organizations were structured, what type of struggles you were involved with, and like any sort of moments that you particularly remember when you were in your youth. That could teach us, for those of us that are youth right now, organizing around the party, what we can learn from you guys that you did in like the 70s and such.
Well, for me, the Angela Davis campaign had became successful, so I wasn't in that part of doing the work around with the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. But I did, you know, participate in different efforts around that and mobilizing, you know, for different things, especially around the Women's Intent, Benjamin Chavis and the Women's Intent case. And so I worked around that on different campaigns with other people in coalitions. I worked also with the, like in the 80s, with the Rainbow Coalition. And some other chapters, distinct from other chapters, we were the only ones in D.C. that was doing international work, international solidarity work. But in terms of the Du Bois Club, came into being right after the McCarthy period in the late 60s to reconstitute, you know, the youth, once again, of the Young Communist League. And then later on in the 70s, you know, the Young Workers Liberation League took shape. So a lot of the work was focused back then was around youth employment and full employment, working with unemployed youth, especially black and brown, who were the most devastated. And so we worked around mobilizing and going into school. For me, I worked in high schools. You know, I spoke in different general meetings where I was invited to come speak to the general population of the high school. And that was an effective tool of getting youth interested, especially around the demonstration that I mentioned earlier, of bringing DC youth participate in the youth march in New York City around youth full employment. So basically, what I was doing back in the 70s, besides, you know, doing a lot of solidarity work, work around Puerto Rico, around Haiti, around Chile. There were so many different campaigns back then. People were really, really active during that period.
Yeah, so part of my YWLL experience was in Florida. Part of it was in Baltimore and some in Washington, D.C. Before I joined the YWLL, ill as a student. I was active in a left organization. Part of my schooling in Tallahassee, Florida State University, actually had a shootout with the Klan.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day. But anyway, so I was recruited at a Florida Atlantic University, originally a socialist action. And I joined the YWL then in 1970 when it was established. And I participated from Miami in the March on Washington, March on the Pentagon. I think it was a march on, I don't remember, but a group of us took a bus up to D.C. In fact, that's on my Facebook page where I'm at a bus station before that travel. Miami was very difficult operating out of the YWL because of the right-wing Cubans in Miami. So when I finally went up to D.C., I was involved in the campaign to free Angela Davis. In D.C., I stayed in D.C. for a while, and I couldn't find work. And I was staying with a gentleman by the name of Bob Lindsay, now deceased. And also, I stayed with Maurice Jackson for a while. I went to Baltimore. I became active again very strongly, and again, the National Alliance Against Political and Racial Oppression, the movement to free Angela Davis. And YWL participated in a lot of other struggles in Baltimore, particularly around depression of youth, of people of color. That's about all I remember. It's been a long time. I still have some buttons from YWLL.
I like to see those.
So it was helping me out because one of the things I did around the Wilmington Fan, I got it really close to some of the guys, especially Joe Wright. And I was mostly doing like counseling, you know, like in terms of he was the LMA, he was like 18 years old. And, you know, he was facing, you know, incarceration and all that. And no one really knew at that point how things were going to work out. I mean, clearly there was a big, massive movement that was launched by the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression and keeping attention and focus and dramatizing, you know, the Wilmington Fan, and they played. And, you know, I remember going to North Carolina, a massive march, you know, to dramatize what was happening to the Wilmington Fan and also to bring pressure to bear on the Supreme Court to take this matter serious consideration. I remember how in the building, how the police were all, you know, following us, or, you know, it was more like the SWAT team was out. And you can feel the tension in Raleigh, North Carolina, from the community, mostly the white community, and the police who was there, you know, all of a sudden you got all these black and brown folks demonstrating, and a lot of whites. I mean, you know, it was really multiracial, multinational, but mostly black and brown folks, you know, bringing to bear attention around the women's consent and the injustice. And, you know, once again, this was another case of racism ran and set because Ben Chavis chose to run for the mayor in Wilmington, and was the power that they sort of railroaded them and framed them up. So they became a very important international case. So I spoke with the youth, you know, on one-on-one, became friends with them, and I like to think that on some level I influenced their political development, you know, in that regard.
That's great. Gato, you have anything to add?
Yes, basically my background is pretty similar to the other comment. That's kind of interesting. When people walk really or travel on the same path to and I know it sounds kind of the physical, but the same path to enlightenment. my beginning started, you know, kind of humbly. My other comrades, I was organizing at a school in D.C. called The Moon, where, you know, I was getting involved in, and basically I was going to Vietnam. I was getting involved in all the requirements that was needed because I grew up in a military family, living off base, South Bay. And then I had a friend who was Filipino, and one of the like commanding officers that was coming from Bolin Air Force Base wasn't that far from Blue High School, and he was in a really ringolistic fashion and racist. He said, "Who is this Kami Pico?" And really, we never exchanged words like that when I was a kid to anybody, because it was a pretty close neighborhood. But Ignacio was some nice Kami Pico. I'm from Filipino or whatever. And he said, "No, you can get down and give me some, like, I don't know, 20 push-ups with this M12 or whatever gun, heavy gun, on his head." And I was like, whoa, you know, because we were like basically like kind of hippie peace kids. And I said, "Oh, that's not necessary." So he punched the shit out of my chest, not knowing who my brother was. Just happened to be a Golden Glove boxer. This was my dad was. He was asking for a lot of trouble coming his way. So I had to go and get down and do the push-ups with him. And then we had to run around the loose track with the weapons on our neck. Now, I was really pissed. So I talked to a couple of teachers who were progressive. They know nothing, they were progressive. I still know some of them. And they suggested that we hook up with some people and meet at the Peace Center and organize. So we organized a group, you know, over there in the Southeast called Students Against the War and the Draft. And I called for a walkout. Turned kind of frantic, crazy, and weapons were stolen out the armory. So I was then shortly incarcerated, and had the FBI trying to interview me, get information. I didn't know anything. I was organizing a demonstration. I wasn't trying to get any weapons. So when that happened, several other schools in D.C. joined our call. I think it was Western, Wilson, Eastern, and Anacostia all did walkouts. And they all kind of went the same way, a lot of police showing up, and, you know, maybe not dressed military folks coming up from Bolin or Andrews Air Force Base, and there was a lot of pressure put on us. And so we had a meeting, and the meeting was very successful, strange enough. That meeting itself was very important in my life, because that meeting, we got word that students had been shot, young folks had been shot down in the streets of Soweto. So one of the guys, I know his name was Ray Stanford, he is quasi in coma, I think is his name now. He's down there at the Panther Mill in California, called for a meeting of all these students against the war and the draft. So I show up, and apparently several other people that I met, he was there, and his little compañero was there. Brother Ken Jones was there, the late brother, comrade Ken Jones was there. Audrey Hare was there.
Audrey Hare?
And I didn't know these people, to be honest, but it was a wonderful meeting. We talked about how we could do demonstrations in front of the embassy, and it was very solid. I saw these people that they had knowledge of organizing far superior to mine, and was in fact doing it, you know. So I showed up at a couple of meetings, did some demonstrations with them, and then the comrade Ken Jones said to me, "What do you think about going to Cuba?" I said, "Man, I would love to go to Cuba, man. I would love to get it." And he said, "Well, we got a meeting of the Bessie Ramos Brigade, and I would put your name in there if I had to go." So, okay, I ended up going up to the Royal Dublin Center, which actually I believe was the former Black Panther Party headquarters that got into a shootout. And they received me well and said, "Listen, you got to, you know, get in some classes." It was the late A.C. Byrd was there, explaining to me, you know, what my path should be in regards to study. It was pretty big, to be honest, because I wasn't used to that. You know, I was used to being a musician. So I said, "I think I can hang with y'all." So I stayed with them, and in fact, it was no joke. I did end up getting to go to Cuba with some really strong comrades, Jaime himself, to the Bessie Ramos Brigade. I think it was the 11th anniversary.
The 11th, that. Yeah, the 11th.
Let me tell
you, you're right. It was the 11th.
So venceremos.
Right, and you can't imagine. Of course, we all can't imagine. But imagine going to Cuba and hearing speeches of Fidel and getting right up close and personal. I was on fire, man. I was on fire.
You made me remember some things, Gato, and you know the many people that you mentioned, Audrey here, Kenneth Jones. These were all folks that were we were all studying Basic Human Bible Center in D.C. And that was a learning center of training cadres for the movement, because all of us came through there. It was sort of like an outbreak of Yellow Springs, Ohio, and then all these centers started propping up throughout the United States. And it basically was like a school without walls concept. And you had Damu Smith, Kenneth Jones, myself, Malva Taibbi, Benito, and these are most of these people I'm naming were party people, or people that joined the Young Workers Liberation, or people that were close with party members. Audrey here with the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. Audrey here was the one that confronted Judge Blackman around the Woman's Consent case about freeing the Woman's Consent. And that was in the Washington Post, and that was televised. And so the kind of extraordinary work that was being done was incredible during that period. I became involved with the Venceremos Brigade and you know, organized around Cuban solidarity events and educational events in terms of educating U.S. folks in terms of why we should develop, you know, friendship, why we should be culturally sensitive to Cuba, the contributions of Cuba to culture, to music, to solidarity, and all these things to sort of open some sort of a dialogue and of understanding and things of that nature. It was a very active period. I mean, I was involved in so many different things, you know, with the Venceremos Brigade, around the solidarity thing, around the anti-imperialist thing. My whole life was that, you know, like, and I'm pretty sure Gato's was that, I mean, I was in meetings and actions and demonstrations. I remember, you know, when the meetings on a yearly basis were a demonstration to make Dr. Martin Luther King a holiday, and the petition campaign that we undertook and getting people to sign a petition to make Dr. King a holiday. I remember that when Stevie, you know, came out in the latter parts of it, you know, and became one of the main organizers and supporters. I remember all those things and the many cold winters and demonstrations, because they were always done in February for some reason. So I remember these events of solidarity, of actions, of mobilizations. I felt connected to the people, you know. I felt that I was doing something, I was making a contribution, I was learning a lot. And the Cabral Tubman Center was a school of training young people and older comrades, because it had a center that was ample, there was constant education going on, there was classes for beginners in Marxism and Leninism, you had classes on political economy, you had classes on historical materialism, dialectics, on the movement per se, on the history of the U.S. working class. And we also had a bookstore that was part of the Cabral Tubman. So we used to make a lot of parties, and we used to have great parties. And that brought a lot of people, a lot of young people within the movement, because of the kinds of parties. Our parties would not only have good music, but would have show movies and slides, and of revolutionary events around the country in the past, in the present, and while people are partying, but also people are seeing, you know, the movies and slides and getting information, and so meeting and greeting people. So it became a location, a safe place, a secure place of learning, of participating, of coming into solidarity with other people, and of growing educationally. and at the same time redoubling our commitment within the movement. A lot of us had a romantic notion about the revolution. We thought that in our lifetime that we would see, you know, socialism in the U.S. Of course, you know, we're nowhere near that, but I mean, we moved up, and that was the sign of the times.
I remember also that Jaime brings up a kind of jolt in my memory of YWLL. I was also, we were also active in the Wilmington 10 movement. Chavis, and actually Ben Chavis came to Baltimore. And Angela Davis actually came to Baltimore at Morgan State College, which is now Morgan State University. And I was on the, with her up there. It was a wonderful time. And I also agree with Jaime that, you know, we had this idealism. It wasn't that all bad, but we had that the revolution was right around the corner and would not be televised.
Exactly. I remember, for example, that we did a huge solidarity march in the, I think, 77, 78. This guy, Ed Ashner, Rosalind crushed it. And I'm meeting these people for the first time on the stage. You know, if it wasn't for the party, I would never meet the kind of humanity that I met. I remember when I was, when the World Peace Council was celebrated here back in 1976 or 77, I was one of the translators. Believe me, my translation, my Spanish wasn't that great, but I did the very best I did. But I remember being in afterwards in these evening meetings with the likes of Alex Legumo, who's a South African writer, wrote beautiful poems. Long since passed, of meeting other members of the ANC African National Congress, of meeting a Greek communist woman who later became the mayor of Athens back in the 90s. I remember Roman Chandra was the head of the Indian Communist Party in India, and meeting all these folks through the work that we were doing, the international solidarity, the peace work that we were doing, we were involved in. That's other work that I the anti-nuclear freeze movement,
right?
Which A.C. Byrd was spearheading to extent, and the study groups that that A.C. Byrd conducted also helped a lot of us, to deepen our understanding about the movement, about the science and how to apply it, how to resolve problems, organizationally, and so. I remember, Mr. Murphy from the Afro-American newspaper. I can't think of his name right now, but he used to consult me, and take me under his wing, George B. Murphy, that's who was the junior. George B. Murphy, Jr., and he would talk to Arturo, myself, Jack O'Dell, was my professor. He taught at Antioch, that's where I first met him. But he continued on because he was one of the editors for Freedom Way magazine. Yeah, Freedom Way magazine. And I was an avid reader. I had all of the anything that was published by Freedom Way. I had the whole collection. There was an old white comrade who gave me all these. He had all these magazines. Of course, when I moved to Puerto Rico and a hurricane just took all that stuff and wiped it away. But, I had the whole collection from the time in 1968 when it started to, it ended in the 90s, I think.
Wow.
So, this was my exposure to the movement, the kinds of people that were, talk about Angela Davis. I worked on security for Angela when she came to town to speak. And all the things that I learned and all the people that I met as a consequence. The amount of knowledge that I know can only be obtained for all of us through the interactions between these people and being in the movement.
I have a question. So how tied is the beginnings of the Young Workers Liberation League to the Freedom for Angela Davis, like the beginnings of the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. So it sounds like a lot of the youth at that time, shock troops, gotcha, for that movement.
We were the shock troops. If it wasn't for the youth who were involved in the Free Angela campaign, it was mostly youth. I mean, but everyone was, every generation was the thing, but it was mostly youth.
I read her book recently, and I didn't see any like direct shout out to like the YWLL. So I was curious if like that was just like kind of hidden under the National Alliance work.
Well, see, I think also a lot of people, you know, do not know that these organizations, these anti-imperialist mass organizations, were created by Stalin. You know, you had Andrew Davis, but you also have a consummate organizer. You know, Charlie Mitchell.
Yep.
And these were the people who were on the central committee, and she, I think both Angela and Charlie were on the political bureau of the Communist Party during that period. And so these are the folks that were given the leadership in terms of the Black liberation struggle, in terms of women's struggle, in terms of against racism and political repression. Because it was fresh. You know, I mean, the campaign about freeing Angela Davis became the organization that became known as the National Alliance Against Racism. It grew out of that experience.
Right, right.
And the same thing had been done to save other lives of people that were, that the same wrong had been done as it was, you know, towards Angela. So, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the influence that Jarvis Tiger
had
on the white well, as myself.
No, James. And James, well, Jarvis Tiger was the first. I think the W. Du Bois clubs. But James Steele was the one that spearheaded for many years. He was a consummate organizer, a great speaker, and he was a good leader. Do you remember him, Carl?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. Yeah, very much. Oh, no, as well as Henry Winston.
Henry, man, he was the best.
The Baltimore.
And Gasol, that combination of having Gasol leading the Communist Party, and Henry Winston. You had other, you know, James Jackson and many others, you know, who Herbert Aplotecker and others were in the party at that time. And there was a lot of production of books that also promoted the party, promoted the struggle. So all those things gave us the tools to become more effective in our organizing, I think.
There's a local person in Baltimore by the name of Jake Green.
Oh, yeah, great, man.
110. The reason I call him because he was a member of the National March on You, my son belongs to the Seafarers, which was Seafarers International, one who broke up the NMU, anti-communist banner. But anyway, Jay Green, he was a pretty salty guy. And, he was 110 years old. And,
he lived a good long life.
Yeah, and it was Margaret Baldrige and her husband passed at the young age of 68, Jim Baldrige. It was quite the inspiring times. You know, Koya, I don't think Koya was in the YWL at that time. I think he was still in Grenada. Fred Marks, it goes by Fred Marks.
Well, it was interesting that you mentioned that, Carl, because, you know, Fred, who's from Grenada, I remember, the solidarity work that was being done through the Rainbow Coalition. And I remember we were able to get Maurice Bishop in the house that I was living at. We did a party as a fundraising. And you had,
Maurice Bishop there, and you have anyone who's anybody back then, because we out of our Howard students there, especially for Caribbean students, Marco and Bonnie and Patrick, who did a play, and played the Justices of Injustice around Jamaica, and that was presented at the Howard University at Crampton Auditorium. So we partook in a lot of different activities culturally, with plays and also musically, you know, gato and mainly. We've done a lot of different works on different levels.
We're instrumental along with Cordy when we were getting Jesse Jackson to come to Baltimore.
Right. But that was as efforts of the Rainbow Coalition, and we were very effective. The party members, Arturo, myself, and others, in influencing the national leadership that was here. We had good relations and good rapport between Arturo, AC Bird, myself, and others, to move them on a much more progressive path. For example, I remember in 1984 that they were going to pass this resolution regarding getting out the vote for Jesse, but that excluded immigrants because they couldn't vote. And we did a boycott. I said, no, wait a minute, this cannot go. This is not acceptable. And we had to move, and we stopped the plenary session because, wait a minute, we may not be able to vote because a lot of people are not citizens, but we can certainly, as we have been, mobilize and distribute leaflets and get the word out and raise money and have events to get the word out on what the plank of Jesse Jackson was and what he was running for, why we should be supported, and all those things. So, when they saw the light, they said, no, that was a chauvinistic position to take solely on the basis of citizenship. And so we had to give clarity, around this important organization, mass organization. So, we were able to influence the YCLers in that process of reassessing their position and taking a broader position that promoted much broader solidarity and a much broader understanding and being much sensitive to the brown community that was, just as affected by, the policies back then as they are now.
What I'm hearing is really, it goes really deeper. The really proud history of the party and as well as the SMASH organization, because that's where I learned that work really tightly when my experiences in Central America, particularly then in Nicaragua during the revolution with WPLW. And we got people that we could highlight as positive. I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. In the people's world, maybe once a month, and maybe every other week, once a month or something, that we could highlight, we could take it on personally, to give praise to Charlene Mitchell and give praise to people like AC Bird and Jack O'Dell and somebody I met and friended her when I was doing this work, organizing work for peace. Of course, the Starwood and meeting Jack and meeting Josephine Butler, Joe Butler, when I was a teenager, had an enormous impact on me because of what they was doing in D.C., particularly the founder of the Statehood Party, was also a socialist. I think we should write something about people like that every month, even if it's just on this day, blah, 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 that a meeting was held with Claudia Jones, or Claudia Jones met with, in England with Paul Roots and the widow of Marcus Garvey. All these things, it's going to get some people, they're going to go,
my memory. I think the YWLL participated in a campaign to get petitions, signatures for Gus Hall and Angela Davis to run
on the
party.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true. That is true.
That's true. Yeah, I remember that. You see,
that is true. But I think the first candidate was Shawnee Mitchell to run for
with Mike Zagarel. Yeah. Him and Mike, her and Mike Zagarel. So I think YWL was in D.C. You know, we might have crossed paths sometimes without even knowing it, man.
I'm pretty sure we did. But, you know, another thing, talking about Paul Robeson, I remember the Warner Theater, there was a presentation of Paul Robeson, and Paul Robeson was, you know, health was really declining. And, not too long after that, he passed away, I think in 78. And, and the presentation that they were doing, the play they were doing about Paul Robeson was really not representative of who he was in terms of his stature.
Right. What
he contributed, you know, to the movement, to the international solidarity, to the African liberation in the continent, to black liberation here in this country. And so we boycotted it. And people were like confused. Why would you? I said, because it's not really a true representation or nothing near what he stood for. And so, you know, and it had to be boycotted because this is not who he was. And I remember his son, Paul Robeson Jr., was very supportive of that. And the party and the most progressive people were the ones that participated in that, in bringing the message and clarifying for people. And that's the importance of us being able to bring back to life, you know, resuscitate these historical figures that meant so much to the movement and who gave so much to the movement and who become important teachers to emulate, you know, men and women who, and young people who participate in this process. Nothing is known about them. Nothing is known about them.
I mean, I just want to interject the point I was making. If, you know, among this group speaking now and others, totally be wrong, is that we could do that. We could make sure we clear the smoke or whatever around certain comments and make it clear that they were revolutionaries, they were in the community, they were amongst us, they were everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere, and if you talk, it was almost like that idea that the person next to you could be a party member. You don't know. You could be on the bus.
You know, you bring up a very important point, Jonathan, because everyone knew in all the solidarity movements around Chile, around El Salvador, around Nicaragua, everyone knew the contribution of the Young Workers Liberation and the Communist Party. Individually, they knew, but they never stated as an organization. But we were all present in all those movements on one level or another. And we recommended good people to participate in those solidarity movements to build a mass movement in this country.
I know that the first meeting in Baltimore that YWLL initiated with some other people that were active around El Salvador was the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, C-SPIS.
Oh, yeah. C-SPIS.
The first chapter, okay, of C-SPIS started in Baltimore. Started in Baltimore, then it spread, you know, nationally. First chapter started in Baltimore with the initiative of the YWLL.
Oh, yeah, no, you know, C-SPIS, you know, people have, you know, our participation in these movements, in originating these movements and giving and shaping these movements and providing all of our organizational skills and abilities. And then of course it grew and it did what it had to do. But in terms of building organizations and guiding a lot of those organizations,
the YCLers and the Communist Party had a great, great influence in those processes.
So can you guys just kind of like go into a little more detail about the leaders of the YCL or the YWL at the time? I know, Carl, you brought up Jarvis at one point. I believe he was the leader of the Du Bois Clubs and the YWL.
Jarvis was influential in the Du Bois Clubs. But the main leader, the principal leader during that period of a lot of organizing, mobilizing, and growth was James Steele. Very confident brother, soft-spoken brother, an ability to really reach people and persuade people. I mean, it was him. And he traveled a great deal around the country and helped, you know, with organizational efforts in growing the YCLs in different places.
Unfortunately, so, people with the, including him, I believe, with the split with the committees of correspondence.
But we had a lot of connections, you know. I remember we used to have activities at the A&E Church on 16th Street, you know, big activities, huge activities, you know.
Yeah.
Can you guys talk about these bookstores? It seems to be a thing that was pretty big back in those days, and they're like all gone now. Like.
You want to start, Carlo? That's because I have stories.
No. I mean, that was the Cabral Tubman Center.
It was a place to meet. I mean, everyone would meet. I'll give you an example. Yeah. We had all the books, you know, on liberation movement besides the science. And so we would meet there, and you had huge, heated discussions that was, you know, undertaken sometimes 10, 15 people were in this club. And these were people buying books, but they all of a sudden engaged in a discussion. And a lot of it is around secretarian ideas and stuff like that. But everyone knew that was a place to meet, that you were going to meet people that you probably will not see under normal circumstances. And you would find them there, new people. It was a place to meet new people, to start relationships. I mean, all kinds of stuff would happen at the bookstore, but it was a place everyone knew in the community. There was a bunch of bookstores and a lot of people, but the Cabral Tubman Center Bookstore was a place to meet, a place to find each other, and it was like a geographic location. Well, let's meet at the bookstore, and people knew where that was.
I kind of wanted you guys to give some sort of remarks regarding tips for youth organizing right now. We're trying to build a new YCL for the party. There's a resolution at the last convention to reestablish the youth organizing in the party. So I'm just curious what advice you guys would give for the youth right now.
I'll start. One of the things for me was that the party or the YCL was the place of learning, of being excited, of learning new things, of struggling against imperialism, of struggling against racism, and even the internal strife that was going on sometimes within the YCL and the misunderstanding, it was still gratifying because you felt like you was part of history. You felt like you was making history. And he was truly making a contribution in changing things significantly. If nothing else, is growing and learning and having a better understanding. And a sense of power, of being empowered, and of having hope, and a revolutionary hope, you know, that things can be done, things can be won, and we can move forward. But it was a place where, the only place that I saw, you know, multiracial, multinational unity and solidarity amongst ourselves here living in the U.S.,
you know, with the Chicano struggle, the Puerto Rican struggle, African American struggle, indigenous. That's another thing I didn't talk about, you know, was when the indigenous Native American Indians took over the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I was there, and I was helping bring in food to the brothers at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So these afforded me this experience of being a YCR, afforded me challenges and experiences that I would never. It was the most enriching experiences that any youth can go through and live through and have great memories of and share with your children and your children's children, that you have a legacy, that you were creating a legacy, even though we didn't understand it at the time, but we have a legacy, and we at least contributed a little bit in forming the movement in this country for socialism.
Carl, Gatto?
I can't add much after. Oh, that's a compliment. That's a peaceful moment. Those times were precious. You know, we want to like people give them getting back or just to be did them. But what we can do is help construct the scene or the environment where the young people who are had already posed overwhelmingly favor socialism over capitalism, that we can help others move down the anti-capitalist road. We can have the youth involved in this and have them let them know that, you know, this is a road that maybe that they can choose for themselves to travel on, even though they may not know nobody that they think they know that's been down this road. But it is very rewarding. It's a path of the future, we know it. I felt teary-eyed when I saw Cuban doctors in China, and then I saw them both together, and I said, hold on a minute. You know, all this wasn't for that. It's faced to us, a small little country, and the Cubans just say things to me while I was over there, and I had an answer for them, and I said to Fidel, come with Fidel, and it was, I thought it was appropriate. He said, came from South Dakota, and I said to the comrade, Sherman, you know, I said, and he took the cigar out of his mouth, like, what the hell are these saying? Then I said, but Faro, in La Historia de Mundo, who would be muy grande. And of course, I got good looks from that. That was like, yeah, dude, I'm glad you finished that off, all right. And it was a big school of revolution. It was a big school of revolution. If you ask when somebody wanted to talk to me, they had finite points about what they wanted to talk about. We need to bring that here.
Wow. That's amazing, Gatto, that you said. I agree with you, you know, because I remember Jesse Jackson's daughter, Yolanda, she was sitting right next to me, and we was going to Havana, and she was asking me questions of, you know, Cuba's nothing like what I've seen on TV. I said, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to learn a lot when you talk to people here on one-on-one. Just randomly talk to them and ask them things, and you'll find out how we've been deceived about the propaganda that we get, and how we really don't know anything about Cuba, and we should. We have a responsibility.
So with that, Jaime, Gatto, and Carl's off the call now. Thank you so much for this conversation, and looking forward to organizing with you guys at the Claudia Jones School.
Yeah, so thank you for the opportunity.
All right, comrades.
Thank you.